Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing well.
Good.
Doing well. Right. I hope I can continue to say that.
As we go through the show.
The country is not doing well, though.
No.
I get a little bit disgusted with the whole thing because, you know, I do have something in my system or the way I'm made up that I don't ever want to say, well, it's all over. You can't do anything. And I always believe you can do something.
Yeah.
You know, you can probably try to spread the truth and maybe somebody will wise up and do the right things. But there are days, and I think this morning was one of those days when I just listened to some of the broadcast that, you know, the hysteria. I concluded because part of my looking at the news is looking at the enemy.
Yeah.
And some of this MSNBC and CNN, they're more hysterical than ever.
Than ever, even when there was deaths. Yeah.
Yeah. But more of this is so disgusting. But I guess when we don't know for sure exactly what the results will be, we have to continue to do the only thing we know how to do, and that is try to understand it and get a few people to pay attention to it. And maybe someday they'll be forced to do it, sort of like the money issue. Everybody knew they shouldn't be doing that. Even the ones that were doing it, they knew it would end. But eventually it has to end and prepare for it. So that's what we're going to talk about now. But we're going back now to an issue because we've been talking so much about, you know, coronavirus and the domestic economy and lockdown and all this. And that is the CIA. And that is a terrible, terrible organization.
Yeah.
And they're up to no good. And unfortunately, we try to give the president some credit when he talks about less militarism and military fighting and bringing troops home. But he's not very good on this issue. Matter of fact, it's a disaster because, you know, in 2018, during his first year when he had Bolton involved, they went and so-called secretly changed the rules on what the CIA could do. Not that it wasn't bad enough already.
Yeah.
But they at least had some regulations, and some they detested because Obama put them on, and that meant you ought to discuss it and talk it over and get further permission to it. And they said, it's too bureaucratic, and I can imagine. But that bureaucracy was serving our interests.
Yeah.
Slow them down. But now they've essentially, you know, in 2018, they have removed, you know, that restraint on the CIA doing secret things, especially the aggressive things. You know, the spying has been going on for a long time, but to commit acts of aggression and cyber warfare. And then I don't know how we can, with a straight face, get up and condemn China. China's involved in it. Russia's involved. They're probably all involved. Israel's involved in it. So they're all involved in this stuff. But anyway, we condemn them like they're terrible. But this authority that was given to them, to the CIA, they can do what they want without even conferring with the president in an emergency. You know, we have to start this. So the CIA have been instrumental in the coups and the assassinations, and they are pro-war, and they get us involved, and now it's actually going to be a lot easier, and they're expressing themselves this way because it was released that this is the power that they have. And this came about not just because Trump went along with it, but it happened to be in a time when Bolton was his advisor, and that was when Bolton was competing with Pompeo. They both had the same position. But sort of Trump got tired of Bolton, but Bolton was instrumental at the time of getting this rule changed, and I think that at that time probably Pompeo was still in the CIA. So it's been done. It's there. It's established. It's policy. It was a horrible anyway to begin with. This just makes it that much worse. And then they can stand behind a presidential finding. All they have to do is write a couple memos. And this is why Congress gave me authority to do this. All we had to do explain that you know, there's a lot of evil out there, and do whatever you have to do.
Yeah, exactly. And it's terribly dangerous. You know, it's so stupid on Trump's part. This is the same CIA that's tried to have a coup against him for the last 4 years. You know, just getting rid of Brennan did not get rid of the CIA's desire to overthrow Trump. So he basically gave some steroids and red meat to the deep state when he did this. Of course, Pompeo was in charge, and I'm sure Pompeo was pushing it. Hey, Mr. President, you want to show some teeth? Don't be such a wimp. We got to get these bad guys. We got to do something different. Don't be like that Obama. He never bombed anyone. Right. You know, we got to go take care of this. And so Trump unfortunately listened to and continues to listen to people like Pompeo. And the first thing he did is, and we've talked about him as well already, he put Michael D'Andre in charge of this Iran Mission Center. And he's known as a Prince of Darkness. He's a crazed anti-Iran covert ops kind of guy, super dangerous. And then, as you say, he granted blanket authority to the CIA to conduct covert actions across the world, not just against Iran, but primarily, but also Russia, China, North Korea. And basically what it says is you don't have to come back for a separate presidential finding for covert action. We're going to just say basically you can conduct the secret war all on your own without, you know, just using your own judgment. Okay, they don't have a great record for great judgment. So he lets them run unsupervised throughout the world. And here's a couple, I think here's three main points on this. Okay, makes it easier for the CIA to attack and damage critical infrastructure of targeted countries. Okay, what does that do? That hurts people. You're talking about electrical grids. You're talking about manufacturing, all civilian stuff. Also the hack and dump. They'll hack into a computer and they'll dump a lot of information about foreign leaders or foreign officials to journalists who then lap it up and publish it. That's the second. And then the third, it lowers the evidence threshold, allowing them to attack media, charities, religious institutions, and businesses overseas in these countries that are believed to be working on behalf of these foreign governments. So you talk about something like RT, for example. Oh, it must be working for the Russian government. So you can it allows you to attack these things. It's terrible.
That would include American businessmen, too.
Yeah, sure.
You know, because they were, you know, when we had an enlightenment after the wall came down, we did business with Russia, which I thought was a good idea. But those are the ones that are susceptible to the sanctions. They're not always, if sanctions were just so simple, just say it's on the Russian government or something, no, they go and they get to go to the financial interest and they go after the American businessman and these other organizations. But, you know, we've recognized that we assume that Trump is somewhat sympathetic about not, you know, starting a major, major military conflict.
Yeah.
But be tough, and believing in being tough, he will prevent this. I think that's a reasonable assumption. But I think what is being revealed here is a little bit more about his foreign policy, because because Trump would talk a little bit and appeal a little bit to libertarians, but boy, he never has given an inch on Snowden. You know, he is not going to help Snowden. And this the way he operates and the way he wants his CIA to be so powerful, I can understand. He doesn't want a Snowden telling us about that. Snowden was telling us about this all along.
Yeah.
So he has done that. But it also reminds me of the Eisenhower foreign policy.
Yeah.
Because Eisenhower was the same way. He was strong. He was a military man. He was in war. He didn't like war. He didn't want to do it. And when there was a few times when the Soviets were moving into Europe, and people said, Eisenhower, you got to go in there. He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it in the Suez Crisis. At the same time, though, he loves the CIA.
Yeah.
And back then, he worked very well with John Foster Dulles and Allen Dulles.
Yeah.
Because they were the ones that were doing this. So in a way, the only thing I think there's a big difference is probably diplomacy and decorum,
yeah,
comparing Eisenhower to Trump. But I think that foreign policy is probably very similar.
There's a false notion that just unleashing the CIA to do a covert op isn't really war. But when you go to another country and you blow stuff up, even if you do it secretly, it's war. And we're seeing a lot of stuff happening with Iran, a lot of fires and seeming cyber attacks. And there's a rush, of course, to blame Israel. But in this case, it may actually be Pompeo and his crew that are involved. But the other danger of this thing is who can play this game. We're not attacking third world countries without any technology. Some of these countries have very sophisticated, and some may argue even more sophisticated than ours, cyber attack capabilities. And so if we go into a room full of gasoline and start lighting matches, it may well come back to blow up in our face. The era where we can completely control the world, particularly in the cyber area, has passed, you know.
Right. And you know, we've relied to keep the empire together, and that's what they're doing right now. Is I think the empire is being threatened. But they use coups and assassinations. They've done that all along. But what they don't really consider, because if you were writing the history during the period of time the Shah was in charge of Iran, they say, you know, things were doing pretty good. I was in the military then. I remember flying into Tehran, and I didn't know too much about foreign policy. I was just, you know, drafted into the military. So I went in there, but it was pro-America, you know, yeah. The whole thing. People could have written, look at this. This is wonderful. But it's long-lasting. People have memories. And this is why you know, Carter had such a problem. You know, finally they rebel, and you end up with a more radical regime to deal with, and we're still dealing with them. So the coup in 1973, it literally is ongoing.
Ongoing.
And
yeah.
But so you might have a position. I don't like all that fighting and stuff, but there's been a lot of fighting and killing over this, and a lot of danger in the world. Just think of you know, the coalition now with the Russians and China and Iran, and how they've been very much involved. But it is related back to, rather than pursuing a foreign policy that we advise, that maybe they would be allies and trading partners. You can't ever tell, but that's not what we have. We have a very unstable world, in spite of the moderate approach to these issues under Eisenhower.
You know, and you think, and this kind of goes on our theme from yesterday, if we actually did have an opposition party in Washington, they would say, this is something to actually look at on the president. This is Pelosi calling for hearings. We need to have hearings in the Foreign Affairs, the Intelligence Committees. The president is doing something that will endanger us. But guess what? They all love this stuff. They can't wait till they get the presidency back so they can do more of it. And so that's the real problem. This is something that maybe Trump should be looked at, you know, and have some oversight with another church committee or something. But no, they love all this stuff, you know, and they'll continue with it. But we wanted to actually bring up another quick thing, because speaking of Pompeo, speaking of the devil, i.e. Pompeo, that he's still waging war, even though he's gone from CIA head to the chief diplomat at State Department. He's still waging war, and you have some stuff on his pipeline wars.
Right. You know, it's getting near completion. And there was an exemption given that the Russians were exempt from sanctions, but they've removed that loophole there. And because it's getting close, and they're bound and determined not to let that happen. It's almost like we're terrified of competition.
Yeah.
You know, it's not exactly free market competition, but it is competition. It's in the other side of the world. And, of course, Russia has already gone to start to build another pipeline, you know, through the waterways rather than just over land. And this is, but we're determined now. Pompeo was very, very, very strong in his language about this can't go and this is not going to happen. So they put more sanctions on some more American business people, you know, that
well
sort
done.
Of thing, not to deal with it, and thinking that is going to control them. But I do see this as a response from a weakening power that's trying to maintain an empire, and the chips are falling in a different way right now.
And it's not pretty. It's ugly, you know, and this is Nord Stream 2. Why do we care if Russia wants to sell its oil to Germany and build a pipeline to do it? How is that possibly an issue? But here's Pompeo, get out now or risk the consequences. That's what he says to anyone cooperating with the building of this pipeline. But what I think we're seeing, and you really hit it on the head, these threats don't hold the kind of weight they may have held 10 years ago, 20 years ago, what have you, before we are weakened by endless wars and all of this bellicose foreign policy. I don't think they carry the same weight. So I think when Pompeo jumps up and down and screams, do what I say, do what I say, the rest of the world's just starting to yawn.
But if they get a relative success, they will have to advance and deal with Turkey and Russia, you know, trying to build a pipeline, you know, through Turkey.
Yeah.
And that's ongoing, but we've already warned them, don't mess around, because we're king of the hill, and you're not allowed to do that without our permission. But, you know, economically speaking, let's say they do that, and nobody bothers them, and they say, well, that's geopolitically and for national defense, that weakens us. But what if it's really what they want to do, give cheaper fuel, more secure, from Russia into Europe. Well, yes, it might weaken NATO or something like that, but it also might lower the price of energy. Why is that? Why do we care that? Oh, they'd worry about American production, and well, we have to maximize profits. Yeah. But if it lowers fuel costs, it might even be a benefit to our consumers in this country. Yeah. You know, that's what they can't measure. But it's power and control, and who's making the profits, and that's been going on for a long time.
It has. Well, you mentioned earlier that you were listening to the opposition media, and you're getting yourself all worked up, and you have a few things that you've been following that I think would be worth taking a look at.
Yes, I was just clipping a few headlines and glancing at it, looking for a good one. And I think, matter of fact, let's start with a good one, okay?
Good.
So this will start off right. Now, how about Kentucky? You know a little bit about what was going on in Kentucky. They said that you couldn't, there was a bar and mask order, but there's still some people in Kentucky, and we know a couple of them,
yeah.
And they say, go on, and we're not going to put up with this. We want to go out and have a good time, and they're not going to have these masks being put on us. So that's people starting to wake up and stand up to them. But they have a job in Kentucky, because I think the challenge there right now is their governor.
Their governor. And this bar owner said, hey, we're Americans. We're going to do what we want to do.
Yeah.
Don't tell us to put a mask on if we don't want to. So that's a great one.
Okay, I have one here, too, that it's stunning. Texas coronavirus numbers show coronavirus 19 less lethal than the last two flu seasons. But why shouldn't that wake somebody up and say, well, maybe we've over-exaggerated. Aren't millions and millions of people dying, you know, and this sort of thing? Yeah, this is very, very serious. You know, I thought of an answer to that because I do think it's serious. But I consider the more serious and the more complex problems are, the more you need individuals figuring out the answers. Why would you want to take a serious danger situation, and we granted how dangerous is another question, and say, well, we want the government to solve it. We want the bureaucrats in Washington, because there's no special interest in Washington. Because if they have a proposal, you can trust them to do that.
That's
so
right.
I would say they're going the wrong way. And not for a minute would I say, because we know people who are real sick from it, and people can die from it. But we also know that people can die from lockdown, and you can lose your liberties if you don't approach this correctly.
Yeah. Well, I've got one that I want to bring up then, if we can put that clip up. This is, he deserves to be the enemy of the week, but this is the Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Here's him, he's furious. People shouldn't be in bars. He said, at this time, it is clear that the rise in cases is largely driven by certain types of activities, including Texans congregating in bars. The actions in this executive order, that is to force you to wear masks, are essential to our mission to swiftly contain this virus and enhance public health. We can only do it if everyone does their part. So if you don't do what he says, you basically want people to get sick. But he issued his executive order, Dr. Paul, now 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, you got to wear a mask inside and outside when you can't social distance. So, okay, not everyone did it. I know a few rebels, maybe even some at this table, who refused to put a muzzle on their face. But a lot of people did. All you have to do is go to HEB or anywhere else to see how many people. So you have, no matter, even if it's not 100%, you have a huge increase in people wearing masks. We've had 2 weeks to see what happens with people wearing masks. Let's look at the next one. It should have really, really went down. Oh, no. The daily new cases are increasing even though he's had a mask order in place for 2 weeks. So clearly it's not putting masks on that are key to reducing new cases. New cases are brought about by a massive, massive increase in testing. And we have a new piece up in RonPaulInstitute.org from a medical doctor saying, well, the problem is that the cases are only 70%, or the tests are only 70% effective. So out of 100 people, you're going to have 30 false positives. If you keep testing, essentially everyone is going to get a positive result, even if they don't have it. So Abbott, I don't know who he's listening to.
You know, I want to talk about homeschooling and what has happened to homeschooling since this crisis was manufactured. And there's a lot of talk now about opening up the public schools again. Are they going to open up in September, and what are the rules? And they're trying to find one universal rule. They like authority to be very powerful, and they're trying to come up with the rules which they can't, and they probably shouldn't have any at all since it's not a federal responsibility. But there's a lot of people in the meantime have drifted over and have already taken up, looking at homeschooling and involved in homeschooling. And I like that because I've talked about homeschooling for a long time and have a program myself that we have, the Ron Paul curriculum. But the people who have been introduced to this and the arguments going on, how are we going to do this? How are we going to take care of seven-year-olds and get them in there? How are we going to get them to sit still and put their mask on? Yeah. You know, it was nonsense. If you listen to the progressive statement, you almost think it can't be this bad. They can't be that stupid. And sometimes it's they're not too smart, but other times they have a goal, and that is to cause chaos and be allied with the Marxists. So, but there's a lot of them right now saying no thanks. Millions says no thanks. That's a good sign. It's a good sign. Let's hope they find one, because the homeschool program that I have is designed for the principles of liberty and why we need to make sure homeschooling and private schooling stays legal, rather than one that's designed as a secular program. So there's all kinds out there. I mean, there's all kinds of homeschooling program. But if I think the principle of protecting free choices and liberties and getting it out of the clutches of the bureaucrats is the most important thing if you want to advance education. So I'm delighted to hear that people say no thanks.
No thanks.
We're not going back. We're too impatient. We want educated before you clean up your public schools.
Well, if you look at the requirements some of these schools are putting on, no lunch breaks, no recess, no going to other classes, sit down there, put your mask on, shut up, and don't say another thing. That's going to work for an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, like you say. Now, there are many good, honest public school and private school teachers, and there are a few people in the Paul family who are involved in education, very dedicated to education. So this is not a blanket statement. There are a lot of very good people, but there are also a lot of teachers who kind of gotten used to sitting around their pajamas and getting a full paycheck. Well, 50 million Americans are now out of work, and they kind of like this idea, and I suspect that these are the people that are driving this. Oh my gosh, it's so dangerous to go back to school. We got to put these masks on kids and not let them do anything. But I've got something that I was going to talk about just for a second too, Dr. Paul, because you I know you really like talking about face masks, and I think it's very important. I came across this earlier today. Let's look at this first. This is just the opening page of a CDC report on emerging infectious diseases, non-pharmaceutical measures for pandemic influenza in non-healthcare settings, personal protective and environmental measures. This is a study that came out in May. If we go to the next one, this is really interesting, talking about face masks. They studied the literature back from 1946 until July of 2018, studied everything about face masks. We found, quote, no significant reduction in influenza transmission with the use of face masks. This is the CDC. Go down there a little bit and you'll see it's in yellow. A disposable medical mask, also known as surgical masks, if they say what they are, et cetera, there is limited evidence for their effectiveness in preventing influenza virus transmission, either when worn by the infected person for source control or when worn by uninfected persons to reduce exposure. Our systematic review found no significant effect of face masks on transmission of laboratory-confirmed influenza. CDC saying face masks do not work. So is it really about the disease?
I thought they were giving us false information. Every once in a while, they've been on both sides of all these issues, like Fauci has been. Okay, this is a couple of quickies here. But you mentioned the 50 million that have filed for unemployment. Well, here's a prediction that 28 million more Americans could wind up homeless, due to what's going on. But it was more or less due to the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I'd qualify that a little bit, because we don't ever, the influenza, which has been worse, they never sat around and say, well, how many people could become homeless, you know, because of the influenza virus? It hurt a lot of people. So, but it's the lockdown, it's the complication of it, in combination, of course, with what the Federal Reserve has done, and that's why it is so bad. But this whole idea that we can say that the homelessness came, it comes from, you know, the virus. You know, they were on the streets of San Francisco and L.A. and Washington and Detroit a long time before this whole thing hit. It's just been made much worse. But let me get to this last one. You might have a comment on it. And that is Moderna, a company that works on manufactures vaccines. They said that they've been working on this vaccine. Induced adverse reaction is now more than half. But a lot of people, I bet you they're watching this program, they say, I'm not going to take this thing, and I'm not going to take this thing, and I'm going to advise my family members not to take this thing. But here's this evidence, and you know, you'd think that would be enough, but it does remind me of my little story I told about 1976. I fought them from them inoculating the whole country, and they did it. It didn't do any good. It was the wrong vaccine because they did it in a hurry. More people died from the vaccine than from the virus. So this is good information that people look at and say, hey, let's go more cautiously. Let's be cautious. That's why it should be in the hands of non-political people, because the complication of this, all of a sudden, people who make vaccines, you mean they might be getting reimbursement from the government? You know, is there a benefit from this? So anyway, I think this is terrible. It's good news that it's out. Hopefully it'll wake up more people to say, you better be cautious if they're offering you a vaccine.
Yeah, these early tests, half the people have adverse reactions, and some of them are severe, severe. Anyone want to line up and volunteer for that trial? You know, well, I close out with a couple of quick ones. I mean, and this is, I know I focus on this a lot, but I am convinced that a lot of what's happening in Texas and Florida has to do with presidential politics and the presidential race rather than coronavirus. We already talked about what's happened in Texas, that the Texas GOP convention was canceled. We talked about Biden being up by a few points in Texas and needing to turn it blue. But we also talked about Florida, which is the big news over and over. It's way too dangerous. Florida's going crazy, and we've done a lot of things to try to dispel that. The hospitals are not overflowing. People are not dying in the streets. But it's having the effect. So let's look at this next clip, Dr. Paul. It's having the desired effect. RNC to restrict attendance at Florida convention amid coronavirus surge. There is no surge. There's a surge in testing, but not a surge in kids. But they're getting it. They're not going to be happy until they cancel this, because this is where Trump connects with people. He connects very well at rallies, and Biden really doesn't do that well at rallies. But I'll do my last thing, Dr. Paul, because I, you know, I always do a villain of the week on Thursday, and it's kind of depressing me a little bit, and there's also way too many of them. So I thought I would do a hero of the week today and talk about someone who we both admire very much, who is a real leader. She has refused to lock down her state. No one talks about South Dakota anymore. Let's put up her picture. She served with you in Congress, Dr. Paul, very liberty-minded. She is Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota. She says there's been no surge. We had a lot of parties on Independence Day. Let me read what she said. She's encouraged public gatherings in recent weeks. She held an outdoor fireworks celebration without social distancing at Mount Rushmore. She also pushed for a professional bull riders competition that allowed fans into a Sioux Falls arena this weekend. She even appeared at that event on horseback, wielding the American flag. Governor Noem is our hero of the week.
We need her to be around and more vocal, and maybe she'll run our national office someday.
Yes.
She makes more sense than what we have up there. I want to close with just talking a little bit about general economic policy. You know, if you have a natural disaster, or you have some type of a problem and a crisis coming, or a war, you know, there's going to be a rush to drain the shelves out and empty the shelves. So governments always get involved. They get involved and have price controls. and wage and price controls too, which I've seen three times in my lifetime. So they have controls, and they want to regulate it because there's a high demand. Of course, the high demand under those conditions is very good. The price goes up, and more people come in and provide the services because you know somebody won't do it and they need it. And it's a real blessing to have prices go up. But immediately in a crisis, what governors do is they punish you if you dare to go into a danger zone delivering some food at a higher price, then you can be arrested and fined. So I'm saying that's the wrong thing to do. The market works. And I think when you have prices to go up, what you really need is the marketplace. You need the market to come in, introduce new products. And this is the same thing with the problem we're facing with coronavirus. It's serious. It's a problem. It's a health matter. Individuals are concerned. Parents are concerned. Doctors are concerned. Hospitals are involved. But the last person or group of people or the last place where we should go for a solution is the federal government or the international government. For that reason, any government, it should be done in the marketplace. So we do the exact opposite. It isn't control. It's like a wage and price controls. What do wage and price controls do? They cause shortages and then black markets. It just doesn't work. So this is what's going on here. They want the government to do this. And every time they do something to solve a problem that has already been distorted and tried to make a political point, everything happens, problems get worse. So they have to have two more rules or three more rules. So I would say what we need is less government involvement. The bigger the crisis, the less the government is necessary. Just avoid it, because people are smarter, and we need more people like the governor of South Dakota. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.